Hi, I'm Steve Mabb, Chair of the Australian Shareholders Association, and we're proud to be hosting the 2024 Investor Conference in Melbourne from the 19th to the 21st of May. And we're stoked that Phil, the host of this podcast, is going to be our special guest MC. If you haven't heard much about the ASA conference, it's a flagship event that attracts around 300 investors and industry professionals, including the chair of National Australia Bank this year, the chair of AGL. We have Dr. Sam Hupert, the founder and CEO of ProMedicus, and we've also got Richard White, the founder and CEO of WiseTech, coming along with many others. For a limited time, new members can enjoy special pricing on registration for the upcoming conference, along with a complimentary 12-month digital membership with the ASA. That's 2-day conference registration plus 1-year ASA membership for $499, a saving of $150. Simply search for Australian Shareholders Conference Register, click on 2-day conference non-member, enter the discount code MEM, as in member, 499, the numbers 499, so that's MEM499 to claim your special offer. Come along and meet me and Phil at the conference. We look forward to seeing you there. And I hope you enjoyed this episode of Shares for Beginners.
Phil Muscatello and FinPods are authorised reps of MoneySherpa. The information in this podcast is general in nature and doesn't take into account your personal situation.
Shares for Beginners. Weekend Watchlist.
G'day and welcome back to Shares for Beginners Weekend Watchlist, where we take a close look at an individual company that you may wish to consider for your watchlist. It's not a recommendation to buy, but a way for you to learn how Stockopedia screens for value. Joining me today again is Elio D'Amato, and we're talking South32, ASX code S32. G'day, Elio.
G'day, Phil. Thanks very much. And yeah, look, this is a stock that's been on the skids for a while now and starting to turn up. So we wrote a recent article about it saying, is it worth a look now? And we're going to talk about that on the show today.
So it's rebounding from recent lows. Is that all to do with the latest quarterly report?
No, to be quite frank. I mean, let's go back and have a bit of a look at South32 and where it's been and where it's come from. And it began its life back when it was split in 2015 and was essentially noted at the time as being the bad assets of BHP. Basically, what BHP didn't want anymore, they put into this entity called South32.
The leftovers that fell off the table, huh?
Yeah, that's right. So it was a pretty hard pitch, to be quite frank, at that time, of the poor brokers trying to raise the coin for it, but they were able to successfully at the end. And I think it's pretty important to note that the business today is very different than it was back when it first listed. And we'll talk a bit about that in a moment as well. But you ask, is it all in the latest quarterly? And to be frank, if you read the quarterly, you're probably scratching your head wondering why the price has rebounded. Whereas really, at the end of the day, this is, as I've talked about ad nauseum on the program, one of those price takers where it can't really control the price it charges the market for the commodities that it trades in. And actually, what we've seen in the last month or so is a bit of a rebound in those key commodities. And therefore, as a result, by extension, you've seen that benefiting South32, because obviously everyone's expecting that to hit the bottom line in time, even though the current financials are not necessarily all that great.
So what are those commodities that S32 produce, and which of them are providing tailwinds at the moment?
Oh, well, look, I'm not going to bore you the snores in regards to everything. Effectively, they take everything out of the ground with the exception of potatoes and uranium, unfortunately, for those bulls out there of the fine yellow cake. But nonetheless, they've got quite a considerable bank of commodities. We're talking from zinc to lead to metallurgical coal through to copper, manganese, nickel, aluminium as well is still a major part of their business. So they're a wide diversified miner. They've got mines located all over the world. And you ask, what are the drivers of the stock at the moment? And what's a driver was once a detractor as well. So obviously a stabilization of the aluminum market has obviously helped there. Plus the corporate activity surrounding AWC and the like that further helps sentiment. The company actually has copper exposure now. Now, it didn't back in the day when it first listed, but it has copper now. It has about 6% worth of the stuff. In fact, I think they took a 45% interest in a non-operational mine in northern Chile, and that effectively gave them that exposure. And then there was also another announcement prior to the recent quarterly where they were actually going to sell their metallurgical coal business in Illawarra, which had been touted for some time, but they've been able to find a buyer. So a stew of good things happening with the commodity price as well as operationally have seen this business find some support and love. And look, I mentioned that it was a very different business today than it was once upon a time. I mean, they've got a key objective of gaining around 90% of total exposure to base metals, as opposed to what was previously a 45% interest in base metals. The best way to think about them, folks, is just think about your steak and potatoes. So nothing all that fancy per se, but obviously needed in this energy transition. Won't define that because I don't have time to do that. And obviously just to make everything from pots and pans to forks through to, you know, the wire that transports this internet connection, for example. So just think of base metals as the core. And essentially that's where South 32 is going. And to be frank, that's probably a good decision. But notwithstanding that fact that being that price taker does mean that earnings can be volatile, as what long-term shareholders will probably tell you in recent times.
Why did they decide to sell Illawarra Metallurgical Coal?
Oh, look, that's a very good question. I think it was about a month prior to the actual quarterly being released that they actually had signed that definitive agreement. But the talk of selling the Illawarra facility had been long-standing now. And to be frank, many analysts had factored in some idea that they would be selling it. The $1.65 billion price tag is also more attractive than what a lot of analysts were imputing. And I think there is an expectation that that will end up flowing through onto the balance sheet and help the business, plus also fund any future acquisitions that the company will need to make. And again, we are in this transition period. We know that there are going to be new energy sources moving forward. We know it's been a particularly tough time for a lot of them. So the time is right for a cashed up producer to go out and buy someone, notwithstanding the current risks involved for the likes of you and me as regular investors. If you're taking a multi-year view, and that's a 10-plus view, generally such moments in time prove to be opportunities.
Stockopedia, and talking about risk, Stockopedia shows that it is at risk of bankruptcy. Is that really the case?
Yeah, it is. I mean, look, to be frank, I mean, when you're talking about a company that is losing money, has negative free cash flow, really effectively is paying more than it earns, there's no reason to suggest that the company wouldn't be at some poor risk. I mean, has negative returns on capital, negative returns on equity. Yes, the numbers are telling us exactly that this looks like an entity that would fail otherwise, except they do have $1.6 billion coming through from that Illawarra coal mine site. So notwithstanding the fact that this is cyclical, that commodity prices have pulled back, that there's been a lot of volatility in regards to its share price and the underlying commodities it deals with. I mean, let's face it, the cost of doing business has been going up. Unfortunately, South 32 have not been able to pass that on to clients necessarily all that easily because they are a price taker. They've got to take what the market's offering, and the market's not offering much. But that has been changing, and that should help. So a combination of the very large asset sale plus an improvement in the outlook of the commodities that it deals with probably means that, yes, it does look like a failed entity at the moment, but we don't expect it to be long. In fact, we expect to improve and get back into that safe zone anytime soon once the company actually does achieve a profit and returns to positive free cash flow generation. When you see that, I think that'll rectify itself and you'll see an overall improvement in the stock rank.
And I think Stockopedia have got it as a 68 quality score, which is not that high. It's not that bad either, is it?
No, and look, it's middle of the table. To be frank, the company's middle of the table everywhere. I mean, I don't want to get to semantics, but obviously as time progresses and the price has also pulled back a little bit recently, that in a bull run where everyone's making money, when you're going back in share price, that's just not going to weigh well on your momentum score, and nor does it weigh well on South 32. So you mentioned that quality. I've currently got 62 as we go live, but again, middle of the table. I'm not going to split hairs over, you know, what's better or what's worse. So it's okay. It's not disastrous. It's not exceptionally high risk, but it ain't necessarily shoot the lights out. And when I look at this sector of a whole range of price takers where I see higher quality scores on those guys because they've been able to, you know, notwithstanding the risks of being a single mine or, you know, a two commodity operation, obviously they're generating better returns on equity, better returns on capital, all those key metrics I like to look at when I'm considering investing in a stock where I can't really control the price that I can charge. I mean, value, look, it's one of our biggest stocks on the stock exchange. So quite frankly, if you want South 32, you got to pay to play. Even with the price pulling back as much as it has, again, it's still middle of the table. It only ranks 55. So, you know, we've got to ask ourselves, does that necessarily improve? Well, it doesn't when the price has a rebound, because we know of that inverse relationship value has with price. So again, that's got to be taken with a grain of salt, but it is cheaper than where it's been in the past. And of course, momentum stinks. I mean, you don't need a rocket science or an academic degree to figure out that a price heading southeast over 12 months, even longer, is not great for the momentum rank, and therefore it's been poor there. But again, it's just above that red zone, so we don't necessarily think it's a complete basket case, but obviously it ain't great. So overall, that comes up with an overall stock rank of 48. Again, when you're a price taker, that's not a great position to be. It means you don't really necessarily have all that much flexibility available to you to be able to do stuff, but they do have that cash injection coming through in regards to that asset sale. And no doubt the improvement in commodity prices will help the business as well. So an investment in South 32 needs to have all those things considered. That, look, it's just a run-of-the-mill business. It was great once. So, Phil, it'd be remiss of me not to mention that the company once was, you know, quite a high-ranking stock. But, of course, once you stop earning profits, then it's going to become really challenged to say you're a quality business. And that's what we've seen with South 32. So we're hoping that a return to positive momentum in those commodity prices and the like will help improve those scores at the moment. But yes, it's definitely one of those turnaround stories, as it were. And for those, dare I say it, value investors out there, it's probably as cheap as it's been for quite a while.
Are you picking shares on gut instinct, buying on press tips or rumours? Do you struggle to find the time to keep up with the research and analysis that goes into evaluating potential stocks? Stockopedia are pleased to offer a special deal to listeners of this podcast, a 14-day free trial and a 10% discount on the first year of membership. Sign up now at y.stockopedia.com/sfb. There's no better time to access the most comprehensive, easy-to-use investing toolbox for DIY share investors. 10% off, 14-day free trial, and a 30-day money-back guarantee. That's y.stockopedia.com/sfb. So let's look at the financials, Elio. What are they looking like?
Yeah, so I alluded to the fact that the company's got negative free cash flow, and that's all symptomatic of a whole range of things relating to its business, including, well, quite simplistically, the amount of sales revenue they've been able to generate has been declining. At the time of their half-year report recently, we saw that decline, which flowed through to operating profit, to net profit. Earnings per share was negative, both on a realized and reported basis. And then, of course, that flowed through to all those key ratios that we like to look at from a quality perspective, which includes the bankruptcy ratio that you were alluding to, but all those other things like return on capital and return on equity and the like, that all being considered part of that, as well as cash flow. And the good news is operationally, so doing what it does, it actually generates positive operating cash flow. So again, I stress this is not a basket case by any stretch of the imagination. But when you take out the large capital expenditure bill that they have, and let's face it, it's big. I mean, those mines just don't appear once you drill a hole and find something. I mean, it's at least 8 years from that first drill through to the full box and dice of a mine being done that they can actually start to bank profits. And then in the case of a South 32, they don't necessarily go out and take those high-risk operations. Generally, they just buy someone that's good, got good assets, and is cheap at the moment. And that's why I'm saying to put them on that alert at the moment, because I think they may be on that acquisition trail, because there could be some good opportunities opening up for them very soon. But, I mean, look, yes, that net debt, it did creep up a little bit in this latest period, which... And net debt does consider that asset value, but part of that is also because the asset write-downs did offset some of that slight debt gain, and we talked about those expenses increasing and the like. So It doesn't look good, Phil, to be frank. I mean, that's what the ratios are telling us. If you want to dissect it and break it down even more, you can break it down to that, you know, manganese operation here in Australia where the guidance has been removed from it for 2025, I think, is when they'll look at it again because of the cyclone, which effectively flooded all the pits, destroyed all the infrastructure, and effectively they've just got to get that all rebuilt and get that restarted again. But, of course, this is far more than a Northern Territory story. They've got exposure everywhere, and notwithstanding that manganese makes up about 10% of their overall earnings, they've still got operations in Africa and a few other places, plus the continued expansion plans that they have for themselves. Investors are sort of looking through this period. And that's why when you read that quarterly, you were left scratching your head because it sounded like you had to be worried. But really, when you looked at the minutiae of the detail, you got a lot more confidence that at the very least, production is on track. It just needs some help from commodity prices.
What about the balance sheet? Has that $1.65 billion been factored in as yet?
No, it hasn't, because when we analyse a balance sheet, we actually look for actual reported numbers. I mean, let's face it, there's a lot of goners and shoulders and all the like, and you never know what can happen in time. I mean, effectively, it's a fait accompli, but we can't necessarily do that. So we only report when regards to our balance sheet once a company actually discloses those numbers. I mean, sure, companies can be creative, but the idea is that auditors are actually pretty solid. So assuming that they're doing their job correctly, we can analyze those numbers as they are printed. And that's what we tend to do. We sort of have to put in the back of our minds that that $1.6 billion is coming. And to be frank, that's part of being a DIY investor. It's not only assessing a business and its current positioning and what it's doing and then looking at analyst forecasts and the like, but it's actually understanding the business. They're not inanimate three-letter codes floating in space. They're actually real operations with real costs, real expenditures, and real revenues and cash flow that we need to consider. And at the end of the day, we just got to do a little bit of reading to get that information because it's pretty open for everyone to see. And you can then do the sums and count backwards in order to identify that the current predicament is probably not going to be that way moving forward once they receive this cash injection. Because, yeah, quite frankly, if they didn't, then the question begs, where's the money going to come from? And that's a whole different debate for another day.
So, Elio, they've divested out of coal and now they're focusing on what they're calling the minerals of the future. Does this kind of ESG-ness of the company make any difference to analysts and the big institutions that may want to invest in it?
Obviously, by taking the anchor away, which was coal, that definitely does make them more attractive. Notwithstanding the fact that green energy is the future, you still need metals and holes dug in order to extract those metals, and that's where South 32 wants to really focus on. And I mentioned earlier that 90% target they have for base metals, and that's really a basic belief and a target, as it were, so that they can really focus their attention on those commodities of the future. And to be frank, again, I jokingly said they're involved in getting anything out of the ground except potatoes and uranium. And look, basically everything except potatoes and uranium are involved in making batteries. So it's a bit of a loose statement. I think analysts will probably look through that. You know, when you look at things like the Hermosa mine that they're going to be getting up and running soon, you've also got that's the Taylor Zinc deposit, for those wondering, and that's going to be a big contributor to revenue coming forward. And, you know, look, I mean, there's a investment decision for that due later on this quarter, hopefully. So, you know, that should hopefully see them good. And you throw in zinc. Oh, I mentioned zinc, silver as well. I mean, in regards to that can be also included. But, I mean, look, you're right. The company has openly said that it needs to move away from the traditional sort of, you know, dirty commodities, as it were, and transition more to, you know, this what the future market demands. The market, the analysts, as it were, nod their head and agree with that as an underlying principle because that makes sense. And I think it's hard to find anyone that would argue against that. But ultimately, what, you know, when an analyst sits in front of their spreadsheet, what they're going to be looking at is how much money is coming in, how much is going out. And then they prepare their DCF valuation, discount the value of all future cash flows or present value today, to determine a value, which, you know, as I alluded to with South 32, given what they've got on the go and given their imminent cash injection, is probably relatively as close as good as it gets for a while. In fact, I think One of our authors picked up some shares just above $2.90, I think it was. So it can get cheaper than where it is now. But again, it's a big conglomerate. You just need to be aware that if you're going to want that exposure beyond a one or two commodity type stock, then you got to pay to play a little bit. And South 32 offers that. And that new dynamicism about them, as opposed to what they were previously when they listed back 9 years ago, that has is obviously very attractive to a potential suitor, to a potential investor in the business. And now, let's not shirt the issue. This is a sector that's prone to big M&A. I mean, I just read with interest the BHP play on Anglo American. I mean, I would never have thought that back in my junior years, but there you go. So you can never say never in this space, except for the fact that they're moving to clean energy, and I think you can bank that.
Elio D'Amato, thanks very much for joining me.
Thank you, Phil.
Thanks for listening to Shares for Beginners. You can find more at sharesforbeginners.com. If you enjoy listening, please take a moment to rate or review in your podcast player, or tell a friend who might want to learn more about investing for their future.